producer, who was a little bit like, unlike Martin, I had to say a line like such as, I play the piano and the lute. So I said it and switch off and say, voice back, Mr. Cook, could you say that again? There were no Christian names in those days. So I said again, I used to play the piano and the lute. Off again, rehearsal stopped. Mr. Cook, I asked you to say that correctly. So I thought, Christ, I don't know why, I can't say it any other how. So I said again, I played the piano and the lute. Stop again. Mr. Cook, we can't go on like this. Would you please say it properly? And fortunately, another actor who was there said, what he wants you to say is lute. Now, Martin would never have embarrassed an actor like that. After that, I couldn't pronounce potato because I was so upset. But Martin would have put it, he would have got the, he'd have got me to say lute right, but he would have done it in a very cunning way, and he was such a nice man. And he got his way with immense charm and great humour. And he altered anything that was wrong in a very charming and sweet way. And I think that comes over. The domestic side of Paul Temple was almost as important as the suspension. And, of course, the actors and the actresses all were, we became all great friends. So we, the atmosphere between Marjorie and myself, I think, did contribute to the success, because we were very close. Funnily enough, although we were great friends, we hardly ever met out of the studio. But we knew, there was a sort of warmth, I hope, came over with the relationship. So it had this, besides the suspense, it had this rather nice atmosphere as well.
What do you think Marjorie Westby's qualities as an actress were, as a radio actress?
Well, she was extremely experienced. She had the most beautiful voice. As you probably know, she was a trained opera singer as well. She sang Mozart most beautifully. And she had a great charm in her voice, and it was compelling. I'll tell you something most extraordinary. Marjorie, while we were in one of the series, a woman wrote to her from Cornwall or somewhere down there and said, I love your voice so much that I'm going to leave you all my money. And Marjorie wrote back and she said, now, I'm not what I sound in the television series, in the Paul Temple series. I am not the willowy blonde, which she sounded. I am, I don't know what she said, but she was a bit cottage loafy. But the woman wrote back and said, I'm still going to leave you all my money. So Marjorie very bravely went down to Cornwall, drove herself down, and said, now look, this is me, and you've got relatives and people, and I don't want your money, I can earn my own living. And the woman said, I don't care, I think your voice is so marvellous. And Marjorie came back. 3 days later, the woman committed suicide and left Marjorie every penny and every possession she had. Now, this is the power of a voice. Extraordinary.
That you were in almost a kind of regular repertory company, the same actors all the time.
Not always, but very nearly. The main characters were all. And we had some wonderful and very, very prestigious actors and actresses who used to come in and play quite small parts because they loved being in the Paul Temple series. There was something very wonderful about it. And of course, there was the repertory company, who were also wonderful. They didn't mind. They'd come in and say two lines as a Russian countess in the first part, and then they were the Cockney chambermaid in the other. They were extremely clever. I could never have done that. I was not good enough.
And what was the public's reaction to you as Paul Temple?
Extraordinary in that what amazes me is the lastingness of people remembering that I played Paul Temple. We used to get enormous fan mail, Margie and I, and nearly all, a great many of the letters were to say, were we married? Were we really married? Which shows that the atmosphere did come over, which always rather excited me. But, and of course, we used to have to open bazaars and we used to open fetes. And one of the worst things I can ever remember was I opened a fete down in the country somewhere on the most appallingly wet day. and they'd rigged up a cart, and the Queen of the May was up there, and I was supposed to crown her. So the rain poured down, so I clambered up the steps, and the poor woman was drenched and looked absolutely appalling. So I thought, well, I'll cheer her up by giving her a kiss. So I plonked a kiss on her, and she was so horrified, she staggered back and fell off the cart into the mud. And so there was that nasty side of Paul Temple doing the social side as well.
I believe Martin C. Webster was claustrophobic. Is that right?
Yes, he was. He would never take a lift in the BBC. He walked up 7 flights of stairs every time. But otherwise, he was perfectly normal.
And he always insisted that the identity of the villain was not revealed to the cast until the final read-through.
Absolutely right. And this was interesting, that one of the conditions that I made when I played Paul Temple was that I had the script posted to me before. You were usually given the scripts at the beginning of the rehearsal. But being fussy, I liked to get my script so that I knew it absolutely, so that I wasn't nervous or wasn't too nervous. And so I was always posted the script, except the 8th episode, and they didn't even trust me with that. I wasn't given it, because they thought I just might give away. So nobody knew, and the cast didn't know, until we actually read it for the first time. And the 8th episode was always a rather worry to me, because it was a great summing up of all the things that had happened. And eventually it came, and, you know, we went through it, and then it was you who did it. And the chap then rushed across and jumped out of the window, or whatever it was. It was always terribly exciting, because we never knew. And it was so cunningly written by Francis that we really didn't know. He scattered false clues all over the place, which was cunning.
And Francis Durbridge wasn't very often present during recordings?
Usually only, I think, in the 8th and last episode, he and his wife used to come and watch. But otherwise, no, he left us alone to get on with it.
And do you know why he gave up writing the radio serials in 68?
I think because they decided to put it on television, which was a terrible blow to Marjorie and myself, of course, but we were obviously didn't look such as we sounded. And so